VentureCast.
They're the best. That song is fantastic. It's great. I got my piece of paper and I was free also. Like, I'm with them on that journey. I pair this one in my mind, this song and Galileo together.
Galileo is great.
Are fantastic songs. Great. And yeah. Actually, I'm just exactly the right age and enough of a goober where when I get closer to five, I'm like, there's a little wisdom in there.
Oh, boy.
There's things you are
the Rasputin in Closer to Five. You're the fucking professor with the little office where you think you got all your rock and roll posters.
Disagree.
And you
Dude,
think you're still
also,
with
you want to hear another pairing? You want to hear another pairing? It's Closer to Five and Closer to the Heart by Rush. Because I've taken both of them in my professional life. I'm not doing that.
I have Closer by, you know what my Closer is? It's Closer by Nine Inch Nails. That's the one I want to do.
All right.
50 years of music with 50-year-old white guys.
Recording on that.
I just made you the host.
You did indeed, fellas. I am so excited to see you on this fine Thursday night in November. Ben Barton, you're in your office in Knoxville.
I am. Rainy night in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Tell me, you're teaching these days on a scale of 1 to 10. How are you doing?
This week, I just finished the hardest week of the year for Torts 1, Proximate Cause, which I won't even try to explain to the listeners. But
Proximate Cause?
Yeah, it's the most confusing part of the semester, and I think I did okay, especially grading on a curve. I've had a crazy, super extra busy week, so I did hang in there with the teaching.
All right. Jeff Simons, where do you rank your teaching these days here in mid-November?
I had two good ones in a row, so I'll give myself like an 8.
Okay.
It was good. I did, I've been doing Modern American Voices, so I did Enzal Dua into Julia Alvarez into Maxine Hong Kingston the last 3 days, and it really can't. I really stuck the landing in the last 8 minutes of class today. I was feeling pretty good about it, but I was like tumbling in space. Like, you know, I thought these three things went together, and then I like 5 minutes to go on the period. I was like, wait, I see it. And I was like, and I landed. And like I, you know, saw my feet and hit the landing. So that felt pretty good.
Awesome. We've been working through Thomas Jefferson's notes on the state of Virginia. Interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Boy, that so, DJ.
For those of you listening at home, Tim has not yet revealed himself on camera yet. Oh. And so I'm morbidly curious here.
So it's,
apparently there's a new look coming, which I'm really excited about.
It is Movember. And so we're
did you say Movember?
Yes, we're highlighting men's health.
Oh,
we've all hit 50. This is when you got to get your prostate checked out. Am I right?
Oh,
so Timmy,
God.
I was really, really, really hoping for the colonoscopy. And actually what I was hoping was we would get your butt with lips drawn on it and you'd be pulling your crack out to do your talking. If it's not that, just leave your camera off.
Ace Ventura, pet detective.
He would like to ask you a few questions.
So, I like what I've done. My children are not yet sold on it.
Oh, no.
Oh.
What do you think?
I will quote the great, my younger daughter, Georgia Barton.
Uh-huh.
There's no such thing as an ironic mustache. If you're doing it, you have to own it. That's what I think.
I'm totally ironic. What?
No, there's no such thing.
Georgia.
It's actually, she's like, it's impossible. Irony is when you have the opposite of the meaning, but it means what it means. That's it. There is no irony for mustaches.
Dang it.
I know it's tough. It actually looks pretty good though.
It does
I really
look pretty
need
good.
Mirrored shades from you.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird how one part's gray and the other.
It is. It's kind of, I mean, unless you're in person with you, it looks like there's a shadow instead of the connector.
I'd be so excited if someone had this podcast recommended to them. And this is their first four.
We are talking about a mustache that other people cannot see. I can't.
Yeah, well,
it's like the 1930s.
Jack
Benny's about to make some jokes in a minute.
No, dude. This is like why text is so much better than video. Don't describe it. People, Imagine the hideous looking Tim Plain mustache that Jeff and I are reacting to in this fashion. And I promise, whatever you're imagining, his mustache will back it up. It's like the Grand Canyon. It's just like, that's how much it is.
It has that much absolute value.
Welcome to 50 Years of Music with 50-year-old white guys. We're part of the Drive-In Podcast Network. Go to musiccitydrivein.com for all your podcasting needs. Gentlemen, it's 1989. I'm going to ask you a serious question about college in just a second. But Jeff Simons, let's get some music into the ears of our listeners with the Grammy winner for 1989. Go.
It's the Grammy winner.
Nick of Time by Bonnie Raitt.
This is what, 20 years into her career when she comes out with this?
16 or 17, yeah. 71's the first record, and this is 89, so pretty close to 20, yeah.
And this was a comeback for her, right? Because I had never heard of her before this album.
Definitely a comeback record. She had been a late 70s, early 80s casualty of indifference, for sure. This is actually her best-selling record, and it's not even close. She was never this big, even in her heyday in the 70s. And then
who wrote this song?
John Hiatt wrote this song.
This is another John Hiatt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is this a cover or did he write it for her?
Unclear. Right. I think it's on a John Hiatt record, but this is when nobody was paying any attention to John Hiatt. Like, he doesn't break through until after this album hits. He breaks through with Bring the Family and then Slow Turning. And they're both after this record. So
that's amazing, dude. Yeah. Jeff clued me in. No Nukes concert.
Yeah.
Bonnie Raitt, John Hiatt doing Angela Montgomery. It's the single greatest thing you're ever going to hear. It's so beautiful. It is fantastic. You agree with that, right, Jeff?
I love that. And my favorite moment in the No Nukes movie is when they're filming backstage and everyone's yelling, Bruce! And Bonnie turns to somebody and is like, the fuck is up with these people? She's just like, why is anybody else here but that guy? She's completely like overwhelmed by the audience's desperation to see Bruce Springsteen. It's really
that
funny.
Song is so unbelievably pretty.
Oh god.
And
yes,
it's a classic. I mean, like it's not Hyatt, it's Prine, right? That's
Prine. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, sorry. And it's with Prine. Prine sings it
with her. Prine, yeah.
And it's it's so gorgeous. It's like she dresses that song up so nicely. It just sounds completely different as a duet than it did as a John Prine song.
Yeah.
And how could somebody go off in the morning, come home in the evening,
and have nothing to say?
Just, searing the description of that relationship. Brutal. Yep.
It's so fantastic. Do you remember how Bonnie Raitt figures in our many Lifetime conversations, Mr. Plain?
How she figures in our
We were in Edinburgh, Scotland.
Okay.
At a bar.
Uh-huh.
And I got just ruined for how I brought Bonnie Raitt into a conversation. Do you remember the context?
No, tell me more.
If we were sitting around and one of the great intellectuals in our group came up with the embarrassing sexist idea, if you had to be stranded on a desert island with a musician, who is your choice? And I said, without any hesitation, Bonnie Raitt. And everybody gave me so much shit. You know, because I was like, look, she's you know, she's age appropriate. She's sexy as hell. She's smart. She went to Harvard. I would like listening to her play the guitar and sing. I would never get tired of it. Like, she'll definitely help gather firewood. She's a total team player. Like, no way I'm going to have this, like, no ego there I'm going to have to take care of. Like, she's the perfect desert island companion.
Wow. And also, and, she ain't no porcupine. So
dude, if a woman ever turned to me and was like, I ain't no porcupine, take off your kid gloves, I might melt from shock. And what a great line that is. So, do you remember your choice?
God, no, I don't remember anything about
it. Surely it was you too. It was the whole band, all of them.
Who did I choose?
Well,
no, maybe Van Morrison.
No, there was because,
by the way, Timmy, if you get too hungry, he's good on a spit. You know what I mean? Like, you can get a lot of meat off those bones.
Oh my God.
Barbecue sauce basting Van Morrison. For days.
It's worse than that. I think you were crushing on the violin player from the Coors or something like that. You had like a really specific, yeah, like
totally not buying any of this.
Anyway, I still remember like nobody at the table backed me up. I stand by my choice to this day, Bonnie.
good work on you. All right, 1989. Y'all are in college. Let's see what's happening in the world. Ted Bundy. Wait,
hold on, Timmy. Yeah. I actually have a 1989 college story that is very related.
Oh, true.
My beloved older daughter, Dahlia, came home over October break, and unbeknownst to Indy and me, she went through our old photo albums and took what she considered to be weird artsy pictures, and that she has them on her wall at college. And it's a really neat little like photo collage. Anyway, that's like 10 pictures. And, she sends him to the family group chat, and India's like, what's that picture on the upper left? And Dolly's like, I don't know. It's like some filthy hole. And it's my sophomore year dorm room. And there's like trash everywhere. It's an amazing, Jeff, do you remember this? I had completely forgotten this. I've got a freaking fantastic 1977 black and blue Rolling Stones tour Japan poster.
That's right.
With a bunch of like weird Japanese text off. I was like, what happened to that poster? That's off the hook.
Yeah.
But the room is so unbelievably disgusting. There's like clothes, but it's like, it's not only clothes, like clothes is regular. There's like uneaten food and open food and trash everywhere. Anyhow, I was like, Dolly was like, I think maybe this is a place that you and mom lived. And India texted back just right away. No, like I would never live like that.
No, absolutely. That's not.
I didn't even date this guy when this happened. And then, Timmy, on a related topic to last week, I was thinking back to sophomore year and my troubles with the ladies. And you know, it's a weird thing. You guys will be very surprised to hear this, but I would occasionally be able to convince a woman to come back to my room, but they never stayed. Isn't that strange? Why would that be? And when I saw the picture, I was like, it must have freaking stank in there. Like my complete lack of knowledge of what women are like at all. Like my just
totally oblivious.
Just what an idiot.
Totally oblivious.
Amazing. Seriously. It's like, you know, it would have taken me 10 minutes to clean that up, and that would have worked out a lot better for me.
That is hilarious. Do you know who texted me 2 days ago from college?
Who?
Dahlia Barton. She had questions about a performing arts high school that she was researching out here in Oakland. It was so lovely to hear from her.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Speaking of the Bay Area, in 1989, you had a bit of an earthquake.
Yeah. I remember we were watching the game at Haverford, and a guy on the hallway across from me had flown home to go to the game.
Oh, God.
And as sports editor of the paper, that was my big exciting interview the next week, where I interviewed him about what it was like to be in the stadium when the earthquake hit.
That must have been terrifying.
Yeah.
What's the biggest one you've lived through out there?
Nothing like that. I hasn't been one that was super concerning since I lived here.
Knock, knock. Yeah, you've had everything else. But
we've had a few things. Yeah, but not the big shake. It's coming, though. It's coming. We're long overdue. So
great. Oliver North is convicted in the United States Senate. Was justice served, gentlemen?
I mean, he's a free man doing talk radio, so no. He was not torn alive by dogs.
Okay.
So no, I would say that Justice and I said that's smarmy. I really dislike him. He represents a lot of things I have problems with in general, just like that overconfident macho bullshit and like a belief in total authority when it's not earned. Like he pushes a lot of my particular irritation buttons and wraps them up in a nice little package. I really don't like him.
Would it surprise you to know that I used to skip school here my senior year of high school to watch the Iran-Contra hearings?
At this point, nothing surprises me totally.
Was that, were you boning up for your next column at The Situation?
You definitely was. Were you in support of Mr. North at that moment? Or?
I was indeed at that
time. Wow.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, you're the best, man. You followed up your hard-hitting pro-Bork thing with the pro-Oliver North thing.
Right.
It's just a political prosecution. Everyone knew that, Tim.
By the way, that played well with the ladies, too, for sure.
Well, when I landed that interview with Fawn Hall, I was very excited.
Hey, there we go. Fawn Hall. I forgot all about her.
All right. Well, let's get to the number one album, Jeff Simons. This surprised me. Did it surprise you?
I guess it doesn't. It was never my number one record, but I'm sure Ben will explain to us why.
After Tracy Chapman, I mean, like, nothing's going to surprise.
Oh, you know what? That's funny. That's right. It was Tracy Chapman. This is, if Tracy Chapman is the alpha, this record is the omega to that alpha. It's everything that record is not.
It's the number one album.
Bobby Brown by Bobby Brown.
You know, it's great. Tracy Chapman, when she's singing He Had a Fast Car, this is the fool with the fast car. That was him driving the fast car at the beginning of the song. Like that is so great. He had a ticket to anywhere. Here he comes.
I think it's a nominee for best use of vocab in a song.
Prerogative is a good one.
It
had to remove that from the SAT list. It was just everyone knew what it was then afterwards.
That's so funny. I remember the first time I heard him sing, "It's my prerogative." I was like, did I hear that right? I must not be paying full attention.
Oh, dude, I didn't get past the get busy. Like, I was so excited by that. I was like, I will work on that.
Oh my God. The best thing about Bobby Brown is Maya Rudolph doing her Whitney Houston impression where she's like, "You wronged me, Bobby Brown! Bobby Brown, you did me wrong!" That's my favorite thing about him by far.
Yeah. It's so hard to choose.
There's so many great moments.
Well, Flannery is on this One Direction kick and everything's One Direction and Harry Styles. I'm like, you got to go back and do a little New Edition in your life. Start listening to Bobby Brown, Ralph Tresvant, Bell Biv DeVoe.
I do like Bell Biv DeVoe. Ben has the best of Bell Biv DeVoe, which he saves because the liner notes are so hilarious.
One of the liner
notes.
That Poison song is just inexhaustibly fantastic. I love that song.
So the short version, I'll try and do the short version of the story. First of all, I got the record that had Poison on it. And this was during the time where I had like 8 memberships to the BMG record club.
Oh, right.
So I already had the only useful Bell Biv DeVoe record, but then they had Bell Biv DeVoe's greatest hits, and I was like, you know what?
Okay,
let's do this thing. Let's go ahead and steer into it, because there's 2 more records after I think the first one's called Bell Biv DeVoe, and then so anyhow, it's a little bit of a sad story. The first album comes out, and a similar thing happened to Boyz II Men. They were just under continuous assault because at the same time, this like really wimpy, Poison's not wimpy, but where this like dance music is coming out, hardcore gangster rap is coming out. And the Bell Biv DeVoe guys were embarrassed. They were like, what we need to do is do a gangster rap album. And then they put out 2 gangster rap albums that were not a so good. That's your minor fraction. All of the greatest hits pretty much came from the first record, and the other ones were like, oh, fellas, please don't read your mentions. Like, don't, like, this is like pre-Twitter, but don't listen to the critics. You know what I mean? Like, there's no, you don't have to put out a gangster rap record. Just put out, you know, Poison and then maybe Avalanche. Like, just keep choosing different disasters and put that beat behind it, and you'll be fine.
All you need. Well, all right. Well, I've got an invitation to cynicism here. In 1989, the Indigo Girls released their debut album, which includes the song Closer to Fine. And Jeff, we were in graduate school.
Oh, boy.
And you and Big Mike were taking turns on the piano and the guitar, and we're having a big sing-along, and we're just jamming any song. People keep throwing songs out, and you guys keep playing them. And then a fresh out of college girl comes up and she's like, do you guys know Closer to Fine? And you and Mike, without looking at each other, just looked at her and said, huh, no.
That's so mean.
Which was a lie.
It was a lie. We both knew it. We knew it well.
And why is it that you wouldn't play Closer to Fine?
Closer to Fine is in the same category as Brown Eyed Girl. And like Louie Louie, and like, man, songs in a sing along. Look at Ben's head's gonna explode.
Hard no. They're
songs that at that point were played so often and requested so many times that they were just hard to find. I had a hard time finding the energy for them. But that's my own. I'm working through my own stuff. Ben will now explain why I'm a monster.
You and Mike both had a hard time with Closer to Fine.
Wait, I played Closer to Fine at a sing-along probably 300 times up to that point. It was the song everybody asked for. And like American Pie, it's the song that everybody asks for. On a verse two, they're like, how's it have to?
Oh, they lose
professor?
It.
Professor, they don't know the words. And you got to go back to the chorus again. Like, it's one of those songs that's complicated enough that people think they know it and they don't. And so Big Mike and I had just silently agreed, like, yeah, that one never turns out the way everybody thinks it's gonna.
I am so excited for Ben to ride to the defense.
He's going crazy.
First of all,
go ahead, Ben.
First of all, there will be many, many pieces of my idiocy.
I'm very sad about Jeff Layton homophobia. I'll leave that there. Second of all, I'm just gonna leave that there. I'm not gonna say anymore. There's no, I don't want to belabor it.
Somebody mute
it. No, don't explain. It's okay. It's okay. Just let it sit there. Second of all, they're great. I love them. They're awesome. I've seen them in concert.
I've seen them in concert.
My dad loves them. They're the best. That song is fantastic. It's great. I got my piece of paper and I was free also. Like, I'm with them on that journey. I pair this one in my mind, this song and Galileo together.
Galileo is great.
Are fantastic songs. Yeah. And actually, I'm just exactly the right age and enough of a goober where when I hit Closer to Fine, I'm like, there's a little wisdom in there.
Oh boy.
There's things you are the Rasputin
in Closer to Fine. You're the fucking professor with the little office where you think you got all your rock and roll posters.
You want to hear another pairing? It's Closer to Fine and Closer to the Heart by Rush. Because I've taken both of them in my professional life. I'm not doing that.
I have Closer by, you know what my Closer is? It's Closer by Nine Inch Nails. That's the one I want to do.
All right. We can have our listeners tweet their favorite Closer songs.
You know what though? Ben's not 100% wrong. I really don't dislike that song nearly as much with 20 years of distance from it.
Dude, it's on my running mix. I love that song.
Yeah, that song's in your running mix. I'm not going that far.
That song and Galileo are on my running mix. I love them. They're all-time classics.
Oh, I love Galileo, but it's a whole, for me, that's a whole different level. They got so much better on that Rites of Passage record. They jumped like eight levels ahead of themselves.
Did you like their Dire Straits cover, Romeo and Juliet?
No, I hated it, but that's okay. That's okay. The rest of the record, there's so many great songs on that record. Ghost is great.
Have the Headed South song or the Down South song? That song is great too.
I know Chicken Man's great on that record. That song kicks ass. That's a great song. So,
all right.
And I've seen them at concert. They sound just like the record. Incredible blend. They're great.
And the fans are the greatest.
And they have great fans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My latent homophobia notwithstanding. Sheesh. Send your cards and letters.
I just backed a bus over you.
Send your cards and letters.
You're like laid down in the street like you were looking for your keys, and I just waiting for me. It's like there's beep, beep, beep. It was coming. You just sat there.
It was right there. All right. So I've got one more 1989 music question for you guys before we get to our three albums. This is a description from Paste Magazine. What are your thoughts on Paste?
Paste Magazine is a really good magazine. It's still going, and they almost reviewed River Run. And
oh, then, what does that mean, almost?
And then they didn't follow up, but they gave an initial interest in reviewing it that never got. So I remain hopeful that they may one day write about me.
Well,
so.
What can we do? Can we tweet at them or something?
You can try whatever you want, but.
All right. Well, their eighth best album for 1989. Is Tom Petty's Full Moon Fever. And I want to read you their review real quick to have you react to it. Everything about making Full Moon Fever was different for Tom Petty. Writing it, recording it in guitarist Mike Campbell's garage, and his choice of collaborators. The result was the best album of Petty's impressive career. Though Full Moon Fever was his first album not to build the Heartbreakers on the cover, most of them contributed, along with Petty's Traveling Wilburys bandmates, Jeff Lynne, Roy Orbison, and George Harrison. Lynne was the biggest influence, giving Petty's immensely catchy songs a glossy sheen with layers of guitars, synthesizers, and dizzying stacks of harmony vocals. With Free Falling, I Won't Back Down, and Running Down a Dream, the album features some of Petty's most recognizable songs, but even the deep cuts here are first rate. Reaction.
It's not his best record. It's good.
And we've buried this record before. Record. I mean, it couldn't be more right. The songs are great. Free Fallen is a great song. I Won't Back Down is like the solo acoustic version of I Won't Back Down. Yeah. And I mean, honestly, I even prefer the Eddie Vedder version. There's an Eddie Vedder version, just him and a guitar where
great.
He's like, and I won't, like he's so freaking livid, like the anger in that song. It's amazing.
It's as good as anything Woody Guthrie wrote. That's how good I Won't Back Down is.
Right. And I mean, even the second side, which has none of the hits on it, You're So Bad and The Apartment Song, like there's some good songs on this record for sure. But the production just is a disaster, in my opinion.
Yeah. Wildflowers is better. Damn the Torpedoes is better. I prefer Southern Accents.
Well, it's funny though. It's what they're claiming to be the real strength of the album is the exact thing
that I don't like about it. Yeah. It's like if Electric Light Orchestra did a Tom Petty record. I mean, it's exactly what it sounds like. And if you like that big glossy jazz hands production, you would love it. But I think it sounds like a demo record that got pushed through a bunch of compression and reverb. It bummed me out when it came out. I was like, it's a record that never loses control. It's always about having a background that serves the vocal. And it's never about the way the background could bring the vocal to life by doing something interesting. Like there's not a single drum fill on that record that catches your attention. There's not a single bass choice because that was the whole point.
How about the solo on Running Down a Dream?
The solo on Running Down a Dream is really good. But I mean, yeah, there's some guitar solos that are great, but most of the background is like deliberately in place to service the vocal. It's pop music.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, it's not going to be one of our three albums, but let's get to our three albums.
Our three albums.
I'm up.
Yeah, first.
I'm up. And I have a question. And Bonnie Raitt served this just fabulously.
Okay.
I would like to hear off the top of your head your all-time comeback records.
Ooh.
Oh. Okay. We'll cut out the dead space. Don't worry.
For those of you listening at home, Ben and Tim are thinking.
All-time comeback records.
Yep.
So
Back in the High Life
by Stevie Wonder was a great choice off the top of your head. Well done.
But that's also, I mean, it's like 15-year gap.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's a great choice.
So there's Bob Dylan's comeback.
Which one? Do you do Blood on the Tracks, or do you do Oh Mercy, or do you do Time Out of Mind?
Oh Mercy was this year, so I was going to say Oh Mercy.
It's a good one. I have Private Dancer by Tina Turner on my list.
That's a great one.
Yeah,
I had American Recordings by Johnny Cash on my list.
That's a great one. Although
And I had John Fogerty's Center Field on my list.
That's a great one.
Yeah.
And actually, you know what's weird is I was thinking about, I actually heard Center Field this morning and I was thinking about it. This was the era of that thing where like middle-aged white guy rock stars all of a sudden had big hit. Robbie Robertson.
Yeah.
Had a big hit album in this stretch. Center Field's another one of them. And what's his name? The Sledgehammer guy. That was another
Peter
one.
Gabriel.
Yeah.
Finally
all
breaks
of these
through.
Things happen at the same time. And they were weirdly connected in my mind.
Yeah. Especially the Steve Winwood, Peter Gabriel thing. That felt like it was all kind of the same dudes.
Yeah.
Doing records. So my pick for 1989 is a comeback record.
All right.
And it's by one of those white guys. It's been around forever. This is a comeback record, not because this guy ever totally went away. This isn't like a guy who completely fell off the radar, but it's a guy who finally made a great record again after making a series of troublingly atrocious records.
I'm pretty sure I know who it is, and I can't wait to talk about the bad records. It's going to be really fun.
It's going to be really fun. So Neil Young rose to fame, and it started in 1969 when he put out Everybody Knows This Nowhere, which had Cinnamon Girl on it. It's when he gets the band Crazy Horse together. He joins Crosby, Stills, and Nash for a record that's like, you know, they were basically the American Beatles for a year before they fought themselves into breaking up. They made it after the Gold Rush. He made Harvest. He made a wonderful trilogy of records in the mid-70s that we've talked about, Tonight's the Night and On the Beach and Zuma. He makes a couple of meh records in the mid to late 70s, but he comes back with Rust Never Sleeps in 1979, which has got Powderfinger and Hey, Hey, My, My. And I mean, it's just chock full of great songs. And then something happens. Neil gets restless and he starts to genre hop. And the first one is Hawks and Doves, which is kind of a maybe a country record, but it's leftovers from other sessions. Then he makes Reactor, where he starts to mess with the sound of his guitar. And I think he's been listening to Van Halen a little too much, but without any of the insight into the gear or the ability of Eddie Van Halen. Then he makes Trans, which is a record where he speaks into a vocoder through the whole thing. And so the record is bad Neil Young music with the Domo Arigato, Mr. Roboto voice over
by
the top
way,
of it.
It's you cannot describe how bad it is.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm doing it. I'm being kind. It's
hey,
one
Jeff,
of the worst records ever made by a major artist.
Hawks and Doves.
Yep.
Reactor. Trans.
Yeah.
Peak chart position for those three albums.
I have no idea.
Which do you think was the biggest seller? Just peak. I don't know the total number of sales. What peaked the highest between those three albums?
Oh, my God. It's got to be Reactor. It's not Reactor.
Reactor clocks in at 27.
Okay.
Hawks and Doves clocks in at 30. And Trans comes in at 19.
Oh, my God. That record
isn't
hit
that
the top
amazing?
20. Do you know how mad all those kids were when they took that record home?
A top 20 album.
That's unbelievable. So have you ever heard any of Trans, Tim?
I have not, no.
You got to do yourself a favor. It's like listening to William Shatner sing rock songs. It's really unbelievable. Then it gets worse. Indescribably, it gets worse. The next record is a rockabilly record called Everybody's Rockin' and Nobody is Rockin'. It's like
number
Neil
46.
Neil Young tries to do like old Chuck Berry rockabilly songs very badly. Then he makes a folk country record called Old Ways, which is so bad that Geffen Records, his label, sues him for breach of contract for not sounding like Neil Young.
Wow.
David Geffen sues his old friend, Neil Young, for turning in records that are so not Neil Young and so bad that he can't release them. That's followed by a record called Landing on Water, where Neil takes the trans vocals and the bad rock music of Reactor and kind of smooshes them together. That's followed by a record called Life, which is supposed to be a Crazy Horse reunion record, but which has the loudest worst sounding 80s synthesizers on the top. It's like a Neil Young record in the background while somebody figures out how to play a Yamaha DX7 in the front. I cannot overestimate how wrong the mix is.
Wow.
Pick any song on that record and listen to 30 seconds there when the keyboard comes in like ba-da-da-da, like so loud and disproportionately out of sync in the mix, you'll burst out laughing. That's followed by a blues record called This Note's For You, which features the couplet "Ain't singing for Pepsi, ain't singing for Spuds," referring to Spuds McKenzie, the Bud Light dog.
Yes.
And by the way, Jeff, you're with me, right? I bought all of these.
Yes.
Oh, I bought every single one.
Kept waiting.
Every single one. I like, seriously, I was like, here's an American master. Like, I thought I had season tickets to Neil Young.
He's Canadian, right?
Yeah, whatever. I know, with you too. I think he's so entrenched in American iconography, but yeah, he is. There is a road in Lake Ontario.
But by the way, Timmy, if you told me that, maybe I would have known. I could have saved my money on the Blue Notes record, which I definitely bought. For
by 1989, I'm just like, he's become a cartoon because he's getting older and the mutton chops are looking worse and worse and he's getting a little heavier and like each one of these genres things is a failure. And he's kind of like, he's becoming a joke. And in 1989, he puts out a record called Freedom. And I am prepared to give it its due and throw it away and like to stupidly buy it. And I think, you know, at this point, Ben, like me, you're waiting to buy these records when they're like a dollar on cassette in a used record store. Like, I'm not that stupid. Like, I'm picking them up late, used, damaged, like cutout bin. And they're still not excited. Worth it.
You don't remember when you bought this record? Because I remember it vividly.
This record comes out, the cover looks promising. He's playing an acoustic guitar in an outfit that's not a genre outfit, embarrassing. And by the third song, I'm like, holy shit, this is a real Neil Young record.
Yes.
It's not just a Neil Young record. It's a great Neil Young record. It starts with a solo live acoustic version of Rockin' in the Free World.
Which, by the way, as soon as I heard Rockin' in the Free World on the radio, this is why I remember it.
Yeah.
That I heard that song before it came out, and I was like, well... Okay, then. Yep. I knew like that at the first 30 seconds of that song, you were like, ho,
welcome back. But and the record holds up. Crime in the City, the second song, is a great story song. We got Don't Cry, we've got El Dorado, which is fantastic. We've got a ripping cover of On Broadway, the old song by the Drifters that George Benson had a hit on, where he turns it into a song about how the inner cities have collapsed and the crack epidemic. It has a great, weird, long kind of art rock song called No More. It has a great old ballad saved from an aborted 76 record called Too Far Gone. And it closes with the full rock and roll version of Rockin' in the Free World. So like Tonight's the Night, it begins and ends with the same song, two different versions.
And don't sleep on Wrecking Ball too. That's great.
Wrecking Ball's great, which Emmylou Harris turns into a phenomenal cover, right? This is a great record. It's aged well. It doesn't sound dated. The sonic experimentations he does in this record totally work for me. They still sound great. And I'm actually going to play a clip of a song that does that. This is Neil Young's great return. He follows it up with another really great record the next year called Ragged Glory. And it makes him relevant again.
And I like Harvest Moon. He hit three in a row.
He really does he really gets a hot streak back. But I think this is my all-time favorite comeback record. And I would say, considering bands we've talked about before, this is Neil Young's Tattoo You, right? The Stones in 81, like Some Girls is a great record, but in 81, the Stones go into their archives, dig around and find all these old songs that they mistakenly let go, write three or four new ripping ones and just own the whole year with a feel good, like one of the few Stones records after the heyday where like you just put it on and listen to it and you don't have to get embarrassed or fast forward. And this is Neil Young's version of that. This was not my very favorite record of this year, but it's damn close. And it's one of those records I played to death in the year it came out. And I still really like it. I'm going to play a section from Don't Cry, which is not as well known a song, because it gives you a great sense of what this record sounds like. It's got all this open space. The rhythm section is not Crazy Horse. They're much better. They're much more precise. And you can hear what he does. He's singing really well and plaintively, but he's also like taking his grungy guitar thing and pushing it to the absolute ridiculous edge, and it totally works. So here's a minute of Don't Cry by Neil Young from 1989's Freedom.
Freedom by Neil Young.
Don't cry.
Stop. I've never heard that song before.
Yeah, it wasn't a hit, but it really does capture the. I mean, there's other songs people know really well. I just wanted to throw one on there that really kind of gets at this what sonically has aged so well about this record for me. So,
good stuff. I love Harvest Moon.
Go ahead, Timmy.
Am I a sap for liking Harvest Moon?
No, I think that's the record's great.
Yeah.
And if Indie Can Canary here were here, that's the record she likes. And actually, at the beginning of this, I was like, oh, Jeff chose one she might like. But then when the angry guitar came in, you lost her for sure.
But she's got songs on here. She'd like Hanging on a Limb. She'd like The Ways of Love. She'd like acoustic, Someday. She'd acoustic, like Wrecking Ball.
The acoustic rocking in the free world she likes for sure.
Yeah, man. This is one of those Neil Young records where there's something for every Neil Young fan, and all of it is good.
Cool.
You know?
Dude, I've got another one. A rough contemporary comeback record that I thought you were going to choose.
What do you got?
Guess what it is. See if Jeff can get it.
I can't get
released it. Released January 1989 after a series of bad records. Lou Reed's New York.
Oh, New York is this year. That's a great call.
Isn't that great? It's really, really similar because Lou Reed went through his own weird trance period where it was.
So
like,
this is like people are coming out of the 80s. People like had that embarrassing 5 or 6 years where they're chasing trends and failing miserably, and everybody just went, because you could argue Steel Wheels is a comeback record same year, right? Like the Stones have essentially
nowhere near as good, but yeah.
But I mean, like after Undercover Stiffs and Dirty Work is not.
I actually prefer Undercover and Dirty Work to Steel Wheels.
That's is that right? I like Undercover. Actually, Undercover is a sneaky great Stones record. You're right.
Yeah.
I take that back.
All right.
The floor.
All right, so I'm going to tell a long, weird story, and Jeff, just jump in when you know what I'm talking about.
All right,
so Matt Dyke is a DJ in New York. He moves out to LA, and he's working at the Gagosian Gallery in West Hollywood. Basquiat comes out for a residency, and they live together for a year, this weird DJ and Basquiat. And there's like a whole bunch of amazing pictures of it. And much of his most famous work was done in this residency. At the same time that he's doing this, he's still DJing. He's got a club called, I think, Power Tools or maybe Power Trip. And he gets to be friends with Michael Easy Simpson and John Gizmo King, the Dust Brothers.
Yeah.
He starts a record label called Delicious Vinyl. And they're like all of these like white hipsters in LA doing this like white hipster DJing thing. They get a visit from Adam Horowitz, King Ad-Rock from the Beastie Boys. Okay, so in 1986, the Beastie Boys record comes out. they've had a medium long career as a punk rock act before they become this frat rap act. They get into pissing match with their label and with their producer, and they just leave and sign elsewhere. And then they go into the wilderness, like into the deep wilderness. And I had this really vivid memory of talking to this dude in high school. I guess it was high school, 86 is when it comes out. I must have been home and break in 88 or 87. Anyhow, he was like, listen, I know people at Def Jam. And I was like, sure you do. And he was like, they tell me the BCs are lost. They tell me the BCs have no idea what they're doing. And I was like, really? Because I was like, I love the last record. And he was like, no, man, no. They got rid of their producer. He's like, they're just sitting in a room making samples and they can't even rap anymore. And I was like, ha, 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 sure. The funny thing is that at the time I thought that this guy was definitely lying. When I look back and I'm like, probably actually did know somebody.
Yeah, I assume that is what
the people at Def Jam were actually saying, because they appeared to lose their minds. I mean, they had a massive, gargantuan, huge number one hit in 1986. And it's super funny. Like, I've repeatedly, including Belle Biv DeVoe, I've given the same advice over and over again. It's like, you know, don't mess with success. Like, if you could be AC/DC, be AC/DC. But that is exactly what they did not choose. And actually, it's super funny because, like, Run DMC tanked after this. Like, all of their contemporaries, except for Public Enemy, who kept evolving beyond it, tanked at this time. And that entire sound went down the tubes, but they got out of the boat right before it happened. So they're just like 3 years in the wilderness. They move out to LA. They're hanging out with these weirdos. So these two guys, the Dust Brothers, our other DJs, and they, Horowitz is hanging out and he's like, what do you got? And so they're just playing an instrumental track and they've got half of the music that becomes Paul's Boutique just as an instrumental track. And Jeff will know this, without a lot of money, what they actually did in that time is amazing.
Oh,
it's amazing. The amount of time that it would take with a four track to like, sample the pieces that they did and layer them on top of each other. So it's actually sort of fun. DJ Girl Talk is a good one to look to, or you can do it for DJ Shadow, but you can go on YouTube and then they'll show you how to use a computer to just make those songs. And it's really, really easy. If you have GarageBand on an Apple, you can make those songs or your own versions of them, like just no problem at all, because you have unlimited tracks and it'll do the cutting and it'll do all the looping for you. You don't have to do any of that as an analog matter. The Dust Brothers created all of this music with the weird drops coming in and out. And it's actually, obviously the Public Enemy one came first, and the Public Enemy one is at least as impressive, but they were doing it in a studio. You know what I mean? They had all of that equipment. They were not doing it the way these guys were doing it. Anyhow, their plan is to release the music that becomes Paul's Boutique just as an instrumental, just to clubs in LA. That was like their great hope. This is their side project, their art project. Jeff, they actually produced three huge hit singles, none of whom were Beastie Boys singles.
I know one for sure, I think.
Let's hear it.
It's can I play a little bit of it?
Sure.
Because I just like, because you can hear, once you know it's them, you can hear it. But until you've made that connection, you'd be like, you got to be crazy. But isn't this one of them?
Bust It.
Oh, yeah.
So much sense.
Pause, man.
You can hear it. Yeah. This is Paul's Boutique.
This is.
I love that song.
Dude. They did Young MC. And by the way, that song is great.
Oh, so good.
That whole record is great.
He says hello, dressed in yellow, comes in next to me.
The whole record is freaking fantastic. Know How. I don't know if you've gone back and listened to Know How. Just stop what you're doing and listen to Young MC Know How from that same record. Banger. And they did the Tone Loc records.
Of course they did.
They did Wild Thing and Funky Cold Medina.
Oh, my God.
And so the funny thing is, They had this, their side project is doing this weird sampling project. Adam Horowitz is like, I'll just buy that. Like, just tell me what you need and I'll just write you a check. And they were like, well, it's not for sale. It's just this weird side project. He's like, we're going to buy it. We're going to rap over it. And they were like, why don't you just let us produce it and we'll do it together? Meanwhile, there's this, these amazing interviews with the Dust Brothers where they're like, these guys are so unbelievably stupid. They think they're going to rap over this weird instrumental. Like they thought it was going to be impossible to do because it's not dense the way that Public Enemy is, but it is. It's complex. You know what I mean? And it's loud and there's a lot of stuff going on.
Oh, it's full of stuff. Yeah.
But dude,
it's
they not, just.
It doesn't sound like you could get voices over it without it being super distracting.
No, yeah. And there's like slow parts and fast parts and funk parts and regular parts, and they just managed to piece it all together into the most amazing, like spectacular pastiche. It's really super extra mega fun for me, and this will happen two other times where I already chose two Beastie Boys songs, but I didn't choose my favorite record. I get to talk about my favorite record. This is my favorite Beastie Boys record.
Right.
I remember vividly when it came out. I had season tickets for them. I loved them. And I was like, even if it's another stupid record, like, I mean, there's a really good chance. Basically, if you heard License to Ill, you're like, the next record could be awful. It really could. Like the next record.
Yeah, they could become Insane Clown Posse like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, like that record is fun and charming and hilarious and unbelievably stupid and annoying, all wrapped up into one. And it just depended what they were going to choose. And right from the gate, they just chose something completely and utterly bizarrely different. But dude, this is how great the record is. There were a bunch of samples that I knew. They sampled themselves. They sample a bunch of hilarious stuff. They sampled Johnny Cash. There's a part where a rap song ends, stops in the middle, and all of a sudden he goes, I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. And then it comes in, ba-da-ba-ba-ba-da, and goes back into the regular rhythm. It's insane. It has I Won't Work on Maggie's Farm No More as a drop in the middle of something for no reason. Anyhow, I love this record. From the get, I couldn't believe how freaking good it was. I couldn't believe how brave it was. I could very much believe how unpopular it was.
Right. Like, although that didn't make sense to me at all. I mean, like you, I heard Paul's Boutique. It was like, oh my God, major artist. Because I didn't find License to Ill as charming. Like I thought it was a comedy record. And I was done with it once I was done with it. Like it faded. And I was like, I will never hear from that band ever again. They are the 99 Luft Balloons of rap. And then this record, I was like, this is so good. The sound of this record is so unbelievably compelling from the second you hear it. I really still can't believe it's the same band. It's incredible.
It's super insane. And so brave. Like it's weird. Like again, that these guys would do this. And then they took another 3 years off and put out another just like freaking banger record that actually hit after this one. But I loved it. And I also like, I was actually happy that it was so weird and that it wasn't popular. I mean, it just made me really happy. But Jeff, maybe you disagree. I mean, I played it at every party. Like I this was on my regular dance mix and I feel like people liked it. Like, I mean, and also it's like, it's hard not to like, I mean, it's just the dance music is just off the hook. Great. So unbelievable. And the combination of the production, Dust Brothers went on to do a bunch of Beck records. I think they did a couple of songs on Steel Wheels. They have gone on to have a very decorated career in and of themselves. The poor guy who started Delicious Vinyl, the original guy, died in his 50s. And I think Matt Dyke, I think he had a bunch of drug problems. So that's not quite as much fun. I actually listened to the entire record all the way through again for the album thing. Like I had my greatest hits from this album. I had 10, I don't know, 6 or 7 of the songs on it. Listening through it all the way through again, I was like, holy crap, it's great. There's not a bad moment on this record, including just like some really, really bizarre moments. Here's what I'm gonna ask for. I'm gonna ask for the first 40 seconds of Shake Your Rump.
Yes, you are.
And then I'm gonna get 20 seconds of The Sounds of Science. And then we're gonna count that as a minute.
Okay, here we go.
Paul's Boutique by the Beastie Boys.
Now I rock the house party at the drop of a hat.
Yeah,
and I beat a body down with the lunar back.
A lot of people, they be chosen just to hear me rock the mic.
They be staring at the radio,
staying up all night.
So like a pimp, I'm pimp,
got a full
beat, shit, man.
I'm
rubbing my legs, good girls, people,
people.
I'm pimp.
Got a race that's the Mardi Gras for jumping on the floor. My man, MCA's got a beard like a Billy Goat.
The point
is the joint.
I'll tell you exactly where to go in the song.
Okay.
All right. So first of all.
But I took an enormous amount of self-control to hit stop. Right. I mean, first, I was gone. Dude, I was gone.
Shake your rump. Like it, all of that is samples. None of that is an actual instrument in the thing. So they would like cut the greatest drum fill from a 78 disco song band. Just fucking kills. Kills. So good. And that like the synthesizer slash turntable. That's the first. This is the first record where that exact noise appears. And that noise like lives in my dreams. Like I just love that noise. That's a soundtrack to my life. And I mean, this is, if it's not the, it's either my most quoted record of all time or among the very short list of them. I quote them all the time. And just a sheer sign of joy. If my daughters were here, they would definitely report this. Just, is a disco call. Like that'll just come out of my face when I'm happy for no reason.
Anytime I'm happy and no one's around, I do that. I'm like Jimmy Walker. I'm dynamite.
Oh yeah. That was amazing. That for was sure. Unbelievable. So good. Yeah, so the sounds of science, Jeff, just start at the very beginning, just 6 seconds at the beginning. Stop.
Now here we go.
Stop. That moo, first of all, everyone on this and everyone is a 50-year-old white guy knows that little like Play-Doh can that you would turn over, they go, that's that noise. And they're like, they literally, like, this is how loose they were. And also the found sounds, like, just as a DJ matter, like, this starts it all. Like, all of the found sound stuff and go mixing and matching with the different stuff and layering them on top of each other. It's fantastic. And it made me laugh out loud. Like, as soon as I heard it, I was like, oh my God. And the funny thing is, maybe you guys will get this. At first, I was like, is that the CNC? And then I listened to it and I was like, wait. Nope, it's the little weird can. I actually knew that noise well enough to picture which fake barnyard animal toy it was that made it. I think if you go to 2 minutes, you'll hear the beginning of their sample of the Beatles, which, and basically, so the, one of the reasons I choose this is a song everybody knows. A bunch of the stuff that they sample, like, and you can go through the list of samples is really fun. They have them. They sample 110 records in 10 songs. Like it's intense how much they do. But this one you'll get.
Here we go.
That's right, my name's Yop.
So, first, they almost got sued by the Beatles. They cleared almost all of these records, and meaning cleared, like, so basically one of the reasons why it was, not only was it not a hit, the record company paid $500,000 ahead of time to clear all of these samples. So they were not happy. And they didn't clear them all. They didn't clear the Beatles sample because the Beatles would never have agreed to have a sample on a Beastie Boys record. So they actually got a letter from the Beatles like, we're going to sue you. And the label was like, what the hell? And they were like, listen, if the Beatles sue us, that'll be awesome. Great PR. Yeah, such a good joke.
It's so great.
But yeah, if you hear what they did to the end of that Beatles song, like just the remix of it and just like the DJ part of it, like so fantastic. Like that's a great Beatles song, but it's not a great dance song, but they turned it into it. Just can't say enough about this record.
Yeah. And they remember like this is pre-Spotify and it's pre-YouTube. So most of these great 70s funk records are out of print. Like they're not in print, which means you can only, and they're not on CD. So you can only get them as used vinyl and they're expensive. So if you're kids like us who are desperate to hear great music, you can't hear this music. Like you don't know how great all the Funkadelic records are because all the Funkadelic records cost a fortune to pick up and they're not on the radio. So Paul's Boutique, like I remember hearing Shape Your Rump is like, I have to find every single one of those records. And when I would accidentally come across, like you would be listening to something else and you would hear that. And you'd I'd have a seizure like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, it's the Shake Your Rump.
Oh yeah, totally.
And then you would buy that band and buy that record. Like the Beastie Boys are, this record's responsible for the resurgence of
partially responsible. Music. But yeah.
Like partially responsible, but like you, for crate diggers like us, Paul's Boutique was like taking a graduate school course on the first 20 bands you have to find.
Oh, dude, and a call to arms. Totally.
Yeah.
It was. Yeah. I mean, this got the Curtis Mayfly Superfly sample with the doom, doom, doom. Yep. And I was like, oh, yeah.
Right. Right. Exactly. And that Curtis Mayfield Superfly goes into a Who track. I mean, like they're just, it's such a polyglot.
Oh, yeah, totally.
There's no judgment. Like if it's good, it's good. And it goes on the record. And that's another great lesson of the Beastie Boys is you can love Funkadelic. You can love the Beatles. You can love Johnny Cash. If it's good, it's good. And don't pigeonhole yourself.
I cannot wait to you guys react to my pick because I it's a band that I'm not terribly familiar with. It's a band that I appreciate. And I want to hear, because I know you guys know a lot more about them than I do, especially when it comes to sampling. But here's a little pro tip for our listeners. If you come at us on Twitter, we will listen to you. We can be bought and we don't even need money for you to buy us. You just have to kind of compliment us and let us know that you're listening. And suddenly your pick for 1989 will become my pick. Either of you guys know this Neil Carson?
First of all, I cannot be bought or sold. I love talking to people on Twitter. I will respond to absolutely everybody that tweets us, but you know they don't make enough money to take my picks, buddy boy. Wow. Let me tell you.
Hey, jeepers.
Man of integrity.
Man of integrity. Neil Carlson is so passionate about 1989 that he messaged me on Twitter to talk about what he thinks is the best album. And it was an incredibly convincing argument. Me, myself, and I, is that where we're going to start?
Oh, yeah.
Great. I got it. Not on Spotify. And do you know why?
Because they ain't playing with them.
They're not paying for it.
3 Feet High and Rising by De La Soul.
Mirror on the wall, tell me, mirror, what is wrong? Can it be my daylight clothes or is it just my daylight song? What I do ain't make believe. People say I sit and try, but when it comes to being daylight, it's just me, myself, and I. It's just me, myself, and I. It's just me, myself, and I.
So you talked about Belle Biv DeVoe trying to change their style and chase what was current. Seems like De La Soul was not doing that. They were who they were?
No, this is a super, super, super current sound at the time. Yeah. Like, this is extremely cutting edge.
But it ain't gangster rap.
No, for sure. They're like, these guys, you know, there was like, at this time, there was a lot of flowering of different avenues that could have possibly been.
But this is out of the New York kind of neo soul positive force.
This
thing,
is
right?
Totally. This is hippie rap. Yeah. And, like there's a bunch of flowers and nice stuff on it. I love this record. I'm into it. That's not my favorite song from it, though.
Three is a magic number is on this record too, right? That song's killer.
It's just called The Magic Number and it's got the 3 feet.
Yeah. But do you know where that say it now comes from? Do you guys recognize that sample? You know, all through that Me, Myself, and I, there's that little say it now voice. It's from this track by the Ohio Players. I just got to play you a little bit of this.
He's here, Mr. Johnson.
Okay, thank you very much. Granny, they're expecting you. You're a little late, so come right this way. Start writing.
Okay. What? Say it now.
Yes. It's a song called, it's one of the first songs I ever owned. It was a song called Funky Worm by the Ohio Players. And it's like a throwaway rap song where the granny voice is in it in the background to the whole thing.
But yeah, the chorus of the magic number is three. It's a magic number. And it's that sample from whatever the
Schoolhouse Rock. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
And then they also,
this is a great call.
They also sample Hall & Oates.
Oh, well, there you go.
Right?
Who knew how important they were? Oh, right.
I can get over that.
I do kind of like this song.
Yeah,
Great. It just sounds great. That sounds like the late 80s to me more than anything else. Like that sounds like, yeah, in a good way. Yeah. That was like, I mean, that I just love that sound. I remember there was a great PBS documentary called Rock and Roll and Unruly History. And there was a whole episode devoted to hip hop and sampling. And it was the De La guys that showed how they did it. Like they had that, like, you know, they play the track and then they had like a big old fashioned sampling computer, Synclave, and they put it on another 8-to-reel tape that locked it in a loop. And he's like, here's where I grab it. And he's like, and he does the thing. And then he pulls the tape out. It's like, now I got you, motherfucker. And it's one of my favorite moments of like, it really, he makes it look so fun and he makes it look like straight up thieving. You know, it really, yeah. It's a great clip. I wish I could find it.
So Ben, you'll love what Neil says. He says the album, along with Paul's Boutique, totally freaked out the record industry because they sampled so many songs.
Yeah.
Without paying royalties. You should let Ben rant a bit about how these two albums led directly to the DMCA, which made sampling way more expensive.
Yeah, and actually, I'm not even the DMCA. It was actually, there's a lawsuit over it, and then they settled it, and then they was just like, everybody rolled over and paid for samples. But Girl Talk and DJ Shadow have not been sued and have basically skated. I mean, part of the reason why is they're not that popular, but part of the reason why is that there's a fair use for this sort of stuff, and I feel like if they really went to the mattresses over it, they would win. That's what I think. I mean, again, it's simple, like what we were saying about NWA, the song Express Yourself, that would be a tough get.
Yeah.
Or the Puff Daddy song that came out after Biggie got shot, where he just
like, oh yeah,
every breath you take, and he gave Sting the money and the bag of money and had him come in and sing over it,
which is the beginning of Sting's amazing career working with hip hop artists that led to that Shaggy record he made a couple of years ago, which I still can't believe is a real product for sale in America.
But yeah, I mean, so those things deserve to be sued. But this record, I mean, the 3 Feet High and Rising and Paul's Boutique, like if you tried to sue them, it'd be really hard. They're just taking, let alone Public Enemy. I mean, they're taking little tiny pieces of song and mashing them all together. They're clearly a new piece of art.
You got to do a lesson on this in your class. You got to.
Well, yeah. Then I got to pick up intellectual property as another interest of mine for sure. Hey, before we leave, 2016 and the Anonymous Nobody, these guys put out a fantastic comeback record. It's so good. They release it for free. I've got two songs on my running mix, Exodus and CBGBs.
Yeah.
Named after the thing. Nice. Exodus. Jeff, do you have it?
No.
Oh, dude. All right. So see if you can find Exodus by De La Soul.
Okay. Oh, wait. Yeah. Maybe I do have this one.
I think you do. Because
that was a
great
comeback record. You're right. Yeah. Here we go.
And you want to go, just go to minute two, because there's a long mumbling poem at the end that just blows my mind every time.
All right, here we go. Minute two, fading in.
We are the present, the past, and still the future. Bound by friendship, fueled and inspired by what's at stake. Saviors, heroes, nah, just common contributors, hoping that what we create inspires you to selflessly challenge and contribute.
Well, that's our podcast. If
that's
I
our point.
Isn't that beautiful?
Goodbye,
that song is fantastic. Dude, that song is so good. That song is so good that Dolly and Georgia liked it. That's how good it is.
Yay.
It's so good that other people like it.
No, I mean that kids like it. So yeah.
That sounds great.
Yeah, that's the good stuff. Awesome. Good episode, guys.
Good
that was good.
Good night, gentlemen.
Say goodbye to the 80s. Say goodbye to undergraduate life, dreams.
1990, we're still undergrads.
That's true.
All right.
That's when I meet my beloved wife, India Kincannon. I'm in for a good year.
Oh, I want a story.
That's why I'm going to choose Fugazi Repeater as my album.
I would if I could. I already played that card.
I'm saying that's what I'm going to choose. That'll really capture the moment.
It makes me so happy. I'm picking a record I love so much. That's going to piss Ben off, but God, do I love it so much. So 1990 is going to be
all right. I think I'm going to pick Oh, I'm good. All right, gentlemen.
I will talk good to know. Good to know Ireland produced a record in 1990.
By the way, just to close out the mustache talk, Timmy, you've got two options.
Yeah, what do I got?
You can shave that mustache off or you can gain 75 pounds. That's it. Those are your only, and you have to lose some more hair on top. If you're going to keep it, you've got to get a lot fatter.
And you might need to get like a little ATV scooter to drive around in checkered pants.
By the way, I went to Lowe's the other day. They're selling motorcycles at Lowe's nowadays, like little mini motorcycles to buzz around. I was like, what the hell's going on? It's by the grilling equipment.
Like, are we talking like glorified mopeds or like souped up rascals? Like what kind of motorcycles? Like
dirt bike by the grills. So next time you're in Lowe's,
come is that up, like that's like, the that gives you a sense of how your children are going to injure themselves in 2 or 3 years, right? Like whatever Lowe's is selling by the grills is the right thing. Sure.
All right, fellas. I'll see you later. Hey, if you're having as much fun as we are, leave us a review on iTunes. Give us a rating on Spotify, iHeartRadio. Wherever you listen to podcasts, give us a shout. And then check us out on Twitter or at our Facebook page, 50 Years of Music with 50-Year-Old White Guys.
Electric Acid. Welcome to the Candle Power Hour. Come with us backstage, behind the scenes of show business spanning over 4 decades and bringing you the experiences that can only be told by the people who were there.
Our guests are from the A-list, the F-list, and everyone in between. Get set for some of the most insane, hilarious, and inspiring stories you will ever hear.
I'm Mercury.
And I'm Diego.
Your host for the Candle Power Hour.
Welcome to Transforming 45, the podcast that celebrates the incredible power of passionate voices. I'm your host, Lisa Boat. Join me in conversation with heart-led humans who share their deeply personal stories of transformation. Transforming 45 is here to uplift, connect, and remind you that it's never too late to write your next chapter. So get ready to be inspired, empowered, and transformed. Join me in this community where through powerful storytelling, we heal and reclaim our inherent magic.
Electric acid.